My wife is trying to encourage me to write a book called Tilt, which is the way I think about marketing. I'm always looking for a different angle. Orgconfessions.com. It just seemed to be an edgy, quirky way of highlighting that people are not doing a great job about implementing Salesforce and they should do a better job.
What's happening, gang? This is your host, Ankit, and you're listening to the Forcepreneur Podcast. On this show, I talk to founders of profitable Salesforce companies and try to get a sense of what it is to be an entrepreneur in Salesforce cosmos. How did it all start? And how was the journey until now? How do they make decisions, both in professional and personal life? Our goal here is to learn from their examples so that the rest of us can go on and build our own profitable Salesforce businesses. My guest today is another Salesforce OG. He has been a customer and evangelist since 2002. He is a writer, speaker, panelist, evangelist, interviewer, and not to forget, a serial entrepreneur. His last venture, Nimbus Partners, was acquired by TIBCO Software in 2011. Though he lives in San Francisco, he hasn't forgotten his British roots, which is evident from his witty tweets and the accent. Currently, he's the founder and CEO of Elements.cloud. Hello, Ian. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming. So, as I said, now you have a long history or journey. Can you please sum up it quickly into Nimbus Partners and we come to how did you come up with Elements?
Yeah, so Nimbus actually came from an idea that a couple of guys came to me and said, at the time I was working for Accenture, and they said, we've got this great idea for an application to help people document and manage all their operational business processes. And I thought, well, hang on, I would use this for every single one of my clients. So I quit Accenture, much to the disgust of my parents, who said, hang on, you've got to the top of this major consulting firm. Why are you throwing it all away? So I worked with Richard and Adrian, and we built up Nimbus Partners. And we were a Salesforce customer. So our customers were the Fortune 500. They were the big, highly regulated banks, insurance companies, food and pharma companies. So there was a big market there, but we needed to manage our business, which was international. If you take your mind back to 2001, we were still running on Access databases. And this new thing called the cloud came out. So we went, this would work really well in terms of using it across multiple countries. It didn't matter where people were. And we became one of a relatively small company, but became a reference customer. And in fact, one of the stories I tell was I was one of the first speakers at London's first, it wasn't Dreamforce, it was London's first event. So 120 people, three customers, and we were one of them, and Mark Benioff. And at the time, people were saying, this cloud thing's never going to work. Siebel's going to kill it. And look where we are now. So we've been customers all the way through the journey with Nimbus. Nimbus got acquired. The three of us all retired, had a couple of years doing things, and then said, right, now what are we going to do? And I got the gang back together, got the band back together and said, look, Salesforce is now a massive company. It's now got a series of problems, process related, but also org configuration related. Maybe we can build some applications around that. So we knew Salesforce really well. We sort of knew the process space before, and that's where we launched in. But I think what's interesting is people go, you've done it before, you must know what you're doing. And it's rather like sport. The longer it is since you last did it, the better you remember you were. Okay, so we went, this is going to be easy. We've done it all before. And well, we moved on. So there were a number of things where we had to go back to the first principles and say, okay, it's now a cloud application, it's now SaaS, it's subscription models, it's very different from where we were. So we had quite a rude awakening, I think.
All right, so for those of us who don't know, including me, what was Nimbus exactly and how does it relate to Elements right now? And then can you please tell what is Elements? I mean, I know what Elements.cloud is, and for the unknown, for the people who don't know, it would be nice to know.
Yeah, of course. Nimbus Partners was essentially Visio on steroids. It was helping people, major corporations, we really were focused on the highly regulated Fortune 500, helping them document their operational processes so they could prove to the regulators they were following due process. So food, pharma, oil and gas, financial services. And our customers were the biggest companies on the planet. And at that time, back in 1997, we had Access databases, and God, I can't even remember what the CRM was, but it was on people's laptops, or in fact on people's computers. And this cloud thing was just appearing, and we had companies, employees around the world, teams around the world, and the whole idea of a shared database was amazing. So we were one of Salesforce's first customers. So in the early days, we were a reference customer. We actually got asked to present at one of the first London events for Salesforce. So there, I can still remember it, 120 people in the audience, three customers speaking, and Mark, and that was it. So we were in at the very early days when the analysts were predicting that Salesforce would never work, the cloud was a bad idea, and look where we are now. So that was where we were with Nimbus. That company was acquired in 2011. The team retired. We all said, we're done now. Had a couple of years, and then trying to work out what to do next. And by that time, obviously, Salesforce had grown to be a huge company with very large customers. And we started looking at the same problem all over again and thinking about business process mapping, that or business analysis would be another way of describing it. And that was clearly a gap in the way that people were implementing Salesforce. So we basically rebuilt Nimbus in the cloud, but then we added to it the whole ability to pull out all the org metadata so we could make sense of what people had customized, and then the ability to document that customization, but then use that documentation as help. So we're really, for Salesforce, we're supporting the whole life cycle of implementation, which I guess we were doing with Nimbus in the for SAP, but we're doing the same thing for Salesforce now.
All right. So a lot of people don't know, and all me including, while I was researching you for this interview, I read Elements is not just for Salesforce. I mean, Salesforce is one of the main focus, but it's not just for Salesforce, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so the business process mapping could be any processes. It could be HR processes. In fact, we've got one client who's using it for implementing Workday. It could be your marketing processes. It could be, so the documentation, so the process mapping could be any operational processes in the business.
Right, right. So
our ability to pull all the metadata out of Salesforce, that builds what we call an org model, like a data dictionary. But you could also build that data dictionary for any other app such as Workday or ServiceNow or Google. They have all got a metadata structure. So you could pull that data out, build out the data dictionary and Elements, and use that as the central source of documentation.
Right. Nice. So, I mean, it's Nimbus, but now it's more in the cloud to say. And do you also integrate with other CRMs, Zoho, for example, or...?
We haven't built an integration, but if someone wanted to go and build a link and pull the metadata out using, say, the Zoho APIs, we have a way of building out that data dictionary the same way as we build it for Salesforce. So there's a little bit, we haven't built the tight integration, but it's, if you understand how your custom app or your CRM or your HR system works, and could pull out the metadata into a simple file structure, you can import that into Elements and maintain that data dictionary inside Elements. Now, over time, we'll build those integrations, but there's nothing to stop a consulting firm or just a company, they're in our IT department, building those integrations with us.
Right. So Elements. So tell us, where are you spread? I believe you are in San Francisco. I know Richard is in Geneva. Do you have offices in APAC? What's your team size like, and what's your pricing model?
Okay. So we are US headquartered. So I have a team out in San Francisco. But again, we're distributed. So we've got people in New York, people down in San Diego in the US. We have a UK operation where it's product management, finance, sales. We also have teams out in Europe, and our development team is all in the Ukraine, so out in the Eastern Bloc. So we are making that sort of distributed model work, but we do get people together We make sure that people get to see each other face to face on a regular basis. I do think that's really important in terms of building a business. Some companies can make the 100% remote model work. I think that's not the way we've chosen to go. Yes, and we're trying to build teams and locations so that people have a sense of ownership, or at least they feel part of something. And you also asked about the pricing model.
Right.
We wanted this to be a product which was relatively easy to purchase. So the last company, Nimbus, was really aimed at the Fortune 500. And we're trying to aim this at the Fortune 5 million. So what that means is that an admin can build a business case relatively easily to say, well, there's only two of us. We need a couple of editor licenses. We need a connection to Salesforce. I can afford that. All the viewers are free. So if anybody wants to view all the content, that's free. So we've tried to make this a level where it's affordable for anyone. And if you're a nonprofit, you get a 50% discount. And that model's working. It's a relatively light touch, low cost model. But of course, at the top end, we've got the largest enterprises that Salesforce's largest customers who are starting to work with us.
Interesting. Just going back to 2002, you have pretty much seen Salesforce mature in product two, right? A few days ago, you just sent a throwback Thursday. Do you have screenshots from 2002? I personally would be very curious to see them. They're like relics, right?
I wish I did. I mean, it's one of those things where if you'd known how big Salesforce was going to get, number one, I would have kept all the swag. I still got some of it lying around. Number two, I would have bought stock.
Right.
I still remember, I was looking around the other day looking for some of the screenshots. So that throwback Tuesday, Saturday one from where it popped up with the force.com page, that's not the oldest. There were UIs way before that where it really was quite clunky when you start looking at it. But again, we were early adopters. The reason that we went with Salesforce was not really the UI. It was the fact that one central source of data, everyone around the world who was working with us can access it.
Right.
And that was the story about the cloud, and still is.
Right. And I believe you are also a programmer at heart, so you also like the product and the S objects and the backend part of it, so to say.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure I'm as much a programmer as our CTO is, but there was no app exchange. So we had to build out everything ourselves. And we had a mantra, which is, if it isn't in Salesforce, it doesn't exist. So Adrian King, our CTO, spent his time killing Excel spreadsheets all over the place to make sure it was all inside Salesforce. By the end, I think we had 285 custom databases. So HR, finance, wow. Procurement. We had a hosted service, so we were tracking all our customers on those hosted infrastructure. So it was a pretty sophisticated implementation of Salesforce by the time we'd finished. And we're doing the same thing all over again. It's just a wee bit easier now. It's easier to do integrations between systems. So the power of Salesforce was there at the very beginning, or certainly within the first two or three years. And we exploited it as much as we could. I think virtually everyone in the company had a Salesforce license. So we had a big investment there, and we needed to make sure it worked for us. And it really did.
Right. So as you mentioned, like, you were speaking in London with Mark. So I believe your relationships to Salesforce have been really close. And as you mentioned, some of the largest Salesforce customers are your customers now. So how has that relationship been? Do you know Mark personally, or some of the big people at Salesforce, like Parker Harris or those? And how has that relationship helped you get new business for Elements?
That's a really interesting question, actually. I think really important as an entrepreneur. Do I know Mark personally now? No. I doubt he'd even recognize me. Parker Harris actually wrote a foreword for one of the books I wrote a while back. And I bumped into Parker at Dreamforce and we had a chat. Oh, no, sorry, at New York World Tour. Has that helped me? I think the fact that we have a history with Salesforce means that customers are more likely to trust us, even though we're not a huge company. I think that's the first benefit. The second is, I'm pretty old, and therefore all the people who I knew in the early days of Salesforce are now EVP level. So that gives me a level of access into Salesforce. That doesn't necessarily help in terms of gaining new customers, but it certainly gives me the ability to drive our product direction to make sure that we're not building something which Salesforce is about to announce. And I think if I'm thinking from an entrepreneur's perspective, you see a market space. If Salesforce has got a team somewhere working on it, you're never going to win. So making sure that we are working with the product teams in particular areas where we're building products, where we are not likely to be in the crosshairs of Salesforce, that they're not about to launch a product that we've spent, I don't know, 6 months building.
Right. So one of the things about, or the undervalued things of being an entrepreneur or being a CEO, is also networking and, you know, being on the pulse of things and being on the beat of things. So, you know, it's not just about getting more business, but it's also about knowing what direction Salesforce is taking so that you can prepare yourself, you know. And that's what I was trying to highlight over here. And also knowledge share. I mean, it's not just about business. I'm sure Parker or Mark can share, you know, very good nuggets of information that can be beneficial for us as entrepreneurs.
Yes, and I think Mark and Parker are at a level of strategy where they're probably too far removed from the product direction. I think dealing with the SEPs, the VPs, and the EVPs inside Salesforce, they're the people who are genuinely driving that level of change. And it's good if an EVP introduces you down to an SVP, they're more likely to take you seriously. Fighting your way up from your partner account manager up through the ecosystem up through the Salesforce structure is quite hard. So my recommendation is go as high as you can and work your way down from there. And again, it's not exclusive. Just because I've got history doesn't mean I'm the only person who can talk to these people. I think the one thing about Salesforce is executives are very open and keen to talk to people at every level in the ecosystem. They really need to understand what is happening out there if they are going to drive an effective business. So people are often frightened and going, "Oh, I don't want to go and talk to Sarah Franklin," or "I really don't want to go. I don't want to go and talk to Simon Mulcahy." They're just people. I mean, they're people there trying to do a job the same way as you are. So don't waste their time. Think about the question you want to what you really need from those people when you're starting to ask the question. But don't be frightened to go and ask that question. They're just people.
Right. I mean, I'm a very extrovert person and I'm personally not scared to go up and ask people. And people are usually very friendly if you go ahead and genuinely ask them. For example, I had a very nice chat with Richard. Shout out to Mr. Richard Parker, your partner in crime. And he was quite generous to sit down with me and just share information about, you know, starting a company and all the other information like that. So, Kaming, what's your revenue like? How is Elements doing in terms of revenue? I believe you guys are self-funded, so you didn't take any VC money?
We've taken some investment. We've taken it through family and friends. So absolutely, we have some investment. I think the one thing about building a business which is cloud-based, subscription-based, and building a product which is in the enterprise space, so therefore it needs to be a significant product, is it's very difficult to do that purely out of cash.
Right.
In the old days where you could, someone would spend, I don't know, 100K up front, that would help you fund product development. But now we're in the world of a subscription basis where it's not 100K up front, but it's, I don't know, $10,000 or $15,000 a year over X years. That's not enough to fund a product development team. We've got 20 in the development team. So, yes, it's been funded from family and friends. There's no external VCs in it. Revenue, we're growing about 10% month on month. So are we cash positive? Absolutely not. Are we intending to be? Yes. But at the moment, we've got about 200 of major customers and then about 3,000 using sort of some of the lower level features. But Salesforce has got, I don't know, 300,000 customers. So we've got a more than a big enough market to go after. So we will continue to invest, continue to grow as we work our way out through all those customers. And we know that they all have a need for what we're doing.
Right. So are you growing your team now or are you at a very stable place? How does your plans look like?
Oh, no, we're growing the team. I mean, we're about 30 now. The aim is to be about 55 next year, about 80 to 90 the year after. So yeah, as we're probably not growing out the development team as much as we're growing out sales, support, and customer success. Right. We have a great, very stable, very, very effective development team, quite a sophisticated development team in terms of, you know, automated testing, regression testing, our ability to release every month in a safe way. We've done a great job there. Adrian King, our CTO, has built a really, really good team there. We now need to focus on building out sales marketing and customer success.
Right. And Elements is pretty young. I mean, it's not that old. Like, you are everywhere. Like, Elements is everywhere. And I appreciate your marketing. And we will come very soon to that. But it's a fairly young company in terms of, you know, maturity. It's like 4 or 5 years, right?
It's less than 4 years old. And I think everybody talks about, oh, we'll build an MVP in the next 6 months and we'll start selling it. I think that may be true in the B2C world. But when you're starting to build something which enterprise customers rely on, it takes a while to build something which is significant enough that they will, a customer will put their personal reputation on the line and say, we want to implement this application. So yes, it takes a while to build a significant size product. And then the job is about sales and marketing. Absolutely.
Tell me about it. I'm developing my product since last 6 to 8 months. And now we are like, okay, this is something. And we are going to go ahead and form a company and go around it. More on that later. So that was good, nice knowledge about the business side. Let's come to the other behind the curtain side. So if this is not your first venture, so how was starting a Salesforce venture different to starting Nimbus? What has been your top three challenges running this enterprise, and especially a business which is focused so much around Salesforce?
I think the first challenge is one of business model. We're a managed package, or we're an application that sits alongside Salesforce. So customers don't expect to spend very much around the Salesforce implementation. So they see packages as add-ons or tools that they can use. So that's the first thing. Secondly, we are filling a fairly critical gap in terms of the Salesforce application. We're the tooling, the documentation, the analysis, which really Salesforce should have built. So this is not a, oh, I'll spend a couple of dollars on it. This is a strategic part of running your Salesforce implementation. But of course, Salesforce are not going to admit that by the time, if you're going to buy this great product, you also need to spend money on this extra add-on product. So that's challenging, which means that we need to build and validate the market in people's minds to make sure they're budgeting for it. I mean, the comment of, I bought this Ferrari, but I'm not going to put any oil in it and I'm not going to pay for any maintenance is nuts. But that's essentially what people have got.
Right.
So that's the first challenge. I think the second challenge is that there are a lot of admins who are coming into the Salesforce ecosystem who've never implemented Salesforce or any system before. And that's obviously the benefit of Salesforce. It can, anyone in the ecosystem can change career. But because they have no experience of implementing software, they don't realize that tools like Elements and other tools, so the release management tools like Copado, are required. So they don't know to budget. They don't know how to build a business case. They don't know they need it. And you put all that together and you end up with all confessions. So I've done pretty well, actually. We spent quite a long time talking, and I haven't managed to mention all confessions. So that's been the marketing, you know, a diamond in the rough, if you will. About it 6 months ago, I started hearing stories about how Salesforce implementations had gone badly wrong, or the horror stories. And I thought, well, hang on, we should make these public. So I created a website called orgconfessions.com, and then people could post anonymous horror stories. And it took a while to get to 100, and suddenly it started accelerating. And we're now up to 640, I think. And these are quite frightening in terms of some of the horror stories that people are writing about. This is great, but this is not about just laughing at other people's misfortune. Maybe there are some interesting insights, or maybe there's some common themes. Maybe we can identify some problems here. So we went through all of them and started to identify sort of the root cause analysis. And the answers were actually quite surprising. They were very, very consistent. There were the top four issues were, number one, not enough business analysis done. So people haven't understood what they really needed to build, understood the requirements. That's the first thing. The second one, no thought about architecture, thinking about how they architected the way they were going to implement Salesforce, how the model, how the different objects were going to work. The third one was no documentation. And then the fourth one was no formal DevOps cycle, the whole idea of having sandboxes, production, a user acceptance testing. And then the last most interesting thing about all of that is those top four items, there is no training in Trailhead.
Hello, listeners. Well, I hope you're enjoying this episode. Before we continue, I would like to share information about another side project that I'm working on. So, as you might know, I have been freelancing for the last 5+ years, and a lot of time people ask me, how do I do it? Therefore, I have decided to make an online course about it and then publish it very soon. Now, I'm still in the preparation mode, and in order to make this course useful for you guys, I need your help. I want you to go ahead and provide me feedback about what you want and what are the hurdles that you face and what kind of information you need. Without this information, this course will not be useful. So go to forspreneur.com/freelance, and I have created a small survey over there. It's just going to take less than 5 minutes or maybe 2, and then I can go ahead and work on this course. Thank you. It's forspreneur.com/freelance. And now enjoy the episode. So I was going to talk about art confessions, and I was going to make a whole segment about it because I think it's a genius idea. And I was not sure whether it's a marketing thing or it is something that you three lads were like, okay, we want some jokes for high tea. Let's just get something. Is it inspired from Secret, or was it, it's a totally different idea?
No, it was Secret, just right? Something which I just spotted a trend here and went, let's see what we can do with it. And I always, my wife is trying to encourage me to write a book called Tilt, which is the way I think about marketing. I'm always looking for a different angle. And this just seemed to be an edgy, quirky way of highlighting that people are not doing a great job about implementing Salesforce, and they should do a better job. It is pure luck that all of the confessions lead back to say, you need elements. But maybe it isn't luck. Maybe it's we built the application which Salesforce implementers really needed. I guess it's obvious that we're filling the problems that we see, and all confessions is the way to identify or show what those problems are.
It's a genius idea, and hats off to you for that. I have uttermost respect. Like, I never saw you, but when I saw this, I was like, I have utmost respect for this man, you know, and the whole team behind it. I tell you a small anecdote about an analysis, what I faced in, you know, in Berlin. So I worked for this startup, and they were funded by a VC, and we had a successful project. This VC funded another startup. Right. So they asked me, hey, would you come and join? Now, this is very small. They have 5 or 6 licenses. Now, a guy comes in. He has used Salesforce. He's a sales guy, you know, and it's a startup. So they are very passionate about selling. Right. So he comes from another company where they were doing things differently. And he wants the things to be done exactly the same way here. And I was like, see, you hired me as a consultant. He was like, I wanted to work just like it was working in my last company. It was something about having an opportunity, then closing a task, and the task must have that kind of, you know, value or subject and stuff like that. And I was like, what is the goal and what are you trying to achieve? I am a consultant. You hired me so that I can help you with business problem. You know, thing didn't go well. He called the old admin. URL hack was a URL hack. Now it's a feature. You know, URL hack works in every org if it's done right. So he just, the admin sent him the URL hack, And this sales guy the next day came to me and he said, I can do a better job at Salesforce than you. And I was like, you know what? Be my guest. And I quit that customer, you know? So sometimes it's not just, it's also a little bit of a people problem, you know, where people just want to do the things they know are done. Whereas we as consultants, our job is to tell me, what's your problem? What are you trying to achieve? And I'll make the custom solution for you. It may be 90% like, you know, how it was in your old company, but no one size fits all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think the challenge is that people aren't able to ask those questions. And it all starts with business analysis. And I think a lot of admins are either A, don't have the experience because they were a manager of a shop. They were a truck driver. They were a hairdresser. They've come from another walk of life. And the opportunity to transform their lives and come into an ecosystem where they can change their life is fantastic. But they've arrived without a set of skills, and unfortunately Trailhead isn't giving them that. And that's why we are building the trails that Trailhead hasn't got around business analysis. So that's the first challenge I think that we've got in terms of for the admin. They don't have the skills. The second is they often don't have the seniority. So someone senior comes to them and says, I want you to add another 5 fields to this object, and I want them to be lookup fields. And they haven't got the skills or the way to say no. And business analysis is the way to say no. You go, yes, absolutely, I'll do that. Could you show me, from a process perspective, how you want this to work? And then the person who's saying, build it this way, will start to show them to themselves that actually that's not the right way to do it. So we need to give junior staff the space and the tools to be able to say no, but in a polite way. And if I saw something on Slack yesterday where someone said, I've been told not to ask questions, just to go and build stuff. How would you answer that? And the response from the ecosystem was, leave. Find a company where people actually will give you the space to ask the questions and challenge the requirements, so you build what they really need, not what they thought they wanted.
Right. And I mean, as much as it is the problem of seniority, I have personally also seen the problem where, let's say, an external guy came, he did things his way, some new people came in, rather than cleaning up the old mess and being like, okay, they said, let's start from scratch. And that's also had led to a lot of duplication. I don't know how much of that you have seen, but let's say an org which has been in the market for 7 to 9 years had 2 or 3 different consulting partners, freelancers. That's also a very totally different mess, you know? So I completely agree with the element cloud analysis, and I have seen it firsthand with my eyes. So apart from doing the trails, what else is Elements doing to, you know, to conquer these challenges? Like Trailhead is good, and you're creating trails with, I believe. Can you speak a little bit about that? Can you give us some hints,
yes,
some sneak peek?
So we are not building Trailhead content inside Trailhead, because that's what the Trailhead team do. We have given all of our content, all our experience of the last 20 years, the books I've written, the articles we've written, we've given those all to the Trailhead team. But it could be 3-6 months or more before that emerges. So we are building out Trailhead lookalike trails on our website called trail.elements.cloud. So we're building those out. We're building them out as there are several out in there already. One around user adoption, one around org cleanup. We're just building the business analysis one. So we're trying to provide the training material in a way that Salesforce admins, architects, developers are used to consuming it in the Trails format. But it's based on a 20 years experience of how big companies do this. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we're on airplanes. Alyssa, who's our VP of community, is out presenting all confessions in a box to user groups. We're sponsoring a number of the dreaming events and also some of the world tours. And we're out there speaking, talking about these things as best practice for business analysis. So Someone came to us the other day and said, you're not really software guys, are you? You're consultants. And I think that's probably true. We are, we like to be consultative. We are, I'm keen to make sure people learn. So I guess I'm an educator at heart, which is why we've written so many blogs, written so many books. And I'm keen to get people that this knowledge so that people who are entering the Salesforce work ecosystem can avoid lots of the problems that their predecessors have had. The whole idea of an accidental admin, how do we avoid that?
Right. So it's trail.elements.cloud, or how do people get access to it?
Yeah, trail.elements.cloud, correct.
And is it just about, you know, bettering yourself or improving and more focused on business analysis, or there is other stuff as well?
We're going to do a number of trails. One is around business analysis. So think about your confessions issue. Business analysis, how to do impact analysis or an org health assessment, how to best practice for documenting your org. Now, there was a Salesforce Ben article, which I've just been published about best practice about documenting your org. There's already a trail up there around how to drive user adoption. So we're thinking about that life cycle and filling in the gaps about that that Salesforce or Trailhead haven't filled in. And these trails are not purely product specific. I mean, you could do what we're suggesting with an Excel spreadsheet and Visio. It's just way harder. So these aren't product training courses. These are principles. This is how you do stuff. We like to think that we've priced elements.cloud at a level where people can afford it. But if they can't, then knock yourselves out. Build an Excel spreadsheet. Use the principles that we're talking about. Use an Excel spreadsheet. It'll take you longer, but if you can't afford the product, then we understand that.
That's what's going to be my next million-dollar question. Is it a free tool or is it a paid tool to learn?
You can do a free trial. There's a 14-day trial, so you can learn how to use it. For lots of customers, we extend that trial because they say, yes, we've done our pilot, but it's going to take us a while to purchase. But we're a paid product. We've got a development team who expect to be paid every month, so we need to make sure that there's a revenue stream there. But again, the nonprofits, there's a 50% discount, so we try, and the cost is relatively low.
So it's kind of a training / in-house training / knowledge base kind of stuff where you can just go ahead and polish the skills that you lack or
Correct.
You already know.
Correct.
Fair enough. Right. Enough about business. So let's jump to other part of the entrepreneurship, which was about relationships or starting companies. So how are your relationships with the local Ohana? I know you guys are pretty much sponsoring every other event. And thank you for that. I think everybody is very thankful for that. You guys are always there in person, present. Plus, you guys also do world tours. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about how are your relationships and how important is it for a company or someone starting out to have those relationships?
Okay, so my strategy around marketing in the early days was that, I'm sorry, I'm not going to spend money with Salesforce. I'm going to spend it at the grassroots at the dreaming events where I can talk to admins at way lower cost than, say, sponsoring a Dreamforce or sponsoring a world tour. But it gives me a chance to, we got a chance to talk to people, understand what their real problems were, and engage with the ecosystem. So if anyone's starting up, I would highly recommend, first of all, supporting your local user group, but secondly, thinking about attending some of the dreaming events as a sponsor. And that was really our strategy for the first few years. And if there was a new dreaming event starting and their question was, can we sponsor? And the answer was absolutely yes. And the second thing was every person running a dreaming event is funding it on their credit card. So my deal with them was the faster you send me an invoice, the quicker I'll pay it. So yes, I'll sponsor it. Send me an invoice today. I'll pay it by PayPal tomorrow, however you want to be paid. And that was our way of also trying to help support the ecosystem. And that was really important. And it built, I think, a strong relationship with the people who are running these dreaming events.
Of course. And we are very thankful for that. lastly, now coming to the end part of the show, so what would be your advice for budding forcepreneurs like myself, someone who's starting a new enterprise in Salesforce? What would be your top three tips?
Great question. Number one, focus. Be very clear about exactly what the market is and try and get a narrow enough focus so you are not building a generic product. Ultimately, you may build a product which can support a whole range of use cases, but try and tie it to a really tight use case so that you can genuinely find 5, 10, 20, 30 customers where it's a must-have. So that may be saying it's only going to be sales, and it's only going to be sales for financial services, and it's only going to be sales for financial services who are asset managers in the New York area. So suddenly you've managed, rather than going, this product is relevant to any company, sales and service cloud, financial services, and pharma. That's too broad when you're starting. So focus, I think, is the first and most important thing. And that way you can end up with a small group of customers who will then coach you into what you really should be building. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, which comes off the first thing of focus, which is then you can start to do some very targeted marketing. And you shouldn't be building sales team and spending a lot of money on marketing until you're really clear about exactly what the product is and do people really want what you've got. I think a mistake people make is that they start to grow, spend money on a sales team and a more expensive marketing until they're really clear about what they've got. What you think the customer wants is not necessarily what they really, really need and are prepared to spend money on. That's the second thing. And then the last thing is, the last thing again is about taking money. Okay. The most expensive money you will ever take is VC money because they're taking a stake in the company. So you should do everything you can to do this out of cash you've got, family and friends, ideally money from customers. So again, the last money you should be taking is VC because you will regret that 2, 4, 5, 10 years down the line when you're massively diluted because the VC owns you. There is a time for investment. So until you have a product that even a customer is prepared to install, that you should be funding that out of sweat equity and however you can make some money. The next piece of money is the family and friends, the seed round, which is starting to then prove that product, you can sell it to 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 customers. Only when you've got that should you be then thinking about taking more serious money, because then you've got a product and you can start to accelerate it. And I think people take investment too early and before the product's really got. Fine, the company may be successful, but you as founders don't necessarily benefit from it financially in the way that you should have done.
Sorry, I think VC money should only be taken when you see that there's a market need and, you know, you have already got paying customers and now you're like, okay, now I want to expand globally. And, you know, you want to open offices in certain places and then go ahead and, you know, have sales team and stuff like that. But you need to have that product market fit and you need to have paying customers. Like, customers are the best investors because they just don't just give you money. They also give you valuable feedback, right?
I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly the approach you should be taking. And one thought, Salesforce is amazing. You can build an application and essentially prototype a business using the force.com app. You can build it out relatively easily,
of course,
and prove whether that market even exists.
Right. Okay. So quickly then, a little more on the person side of you. So you have been in the game long enough. Any entrepreneurs or people you look up to or for inspiration?
That's a great question. Clearly, Mark Benioff has done an amazing job, not just in terms of building a large company, but in terms of his passion and also his values. He's trying to build the right company, not just a company that makes him financially well off. So I think that's really important. But you're never going to get one-on-one time with Mark to say, tell me how you did this. Clearly, he's written books. And for anyone who's starting off in business, I would highly recommend not this latest book, but the first one, Behind the Cloud. that was really about how he built Salesforce, and that's a great book to read. The other thing I'd say, though, is around mentors or people to look up to. Quite often as an entrepreneur, even if you've got a small team, you may well essentially be the solo entrepreneur. And go and find other entrepreneurs who are 1, 2, 3 years ahead of you who have got different skills from you, and use those as a sounding board. Go and say, right, can I buy you lunch? And just have a discussion. I remember in the early days, I used to have a quarterly meeting with 2 or 3 different people, and there was no agenda, no idea what we were going to talk about, but they had a very different perspective. One of them ran a technology company, B2C, one of them ran a consulting business, and we always had something interesting to talk about. And that networking, rather than necessarily that adulation of this is the entrepreneur I want to be, build that network, that support network that is not necessarily inside the company, but outside the company. And use that as a way of bouncing your ideas, validating your ideas, but don't necessarily go with a set agenda. I mean, I call it a conversation of possibilities. I've booked lunch in a restaurant, no idea what we're going to talk about. Let's see what comes up.
Right, to getting a mentor or somebody like that, you know, who can just guide you with that.
Yeah, but it's more than one. I think it's more than a mentor. I think it's often 2 or 3 different people. And I remember in the early days, I used to organize a dinner once a quarter, and it was called Real Networking.
Wow.
So it wasn't about a bunch of people going and trying to sell to each other. It was genuinely, I pulled together a bunch of people who had dinner, who had no fixed agenda, and it was just an evening's discussion. But it was, the deal was no pitching people on products. It was an open discussion about whatever was happening.
And it worked, like people were not pitching product at all. And these are entrepreneurs, I believe.
Absolutely. I mean, you obviously talk about your company, but because many of us were selling to Fortune 500 companies and the other entrepreneurs weren't Fortune 500, then we weren't A, in competition, and B, weren't likely to buy each other's product.
Right.
You go to networking events and you discover that half the people are lawyers, accountants, VCs. And there's always someone's got an angle. So the accountants, the lawyers want to sell to you because you're an entrepreneur. You're trying to sell to the VC. And it's a very asymmetric relationship. If you put a bunch of entrepreneur CEOs in the room, then they've all got one thing in common, which is they're all trying to grow a business. And they're not in competition.
Nice. That was a lot of good information. Ian, thank you so much. Thank you for your time. And it was really nice talking to you. I think people can take a lot of learning from you, and especially the things that you mentioned about focus. That was very important to me, like not losing the eye from the ball and, you know, having a narrowed focus on what you want to do. Before we finish, I have a small rapid fire round. It's a small surprise. It's just this and that to get the person behind Elements a little better. So are you ready for that?
Okay. Yeah, of course.
Sure. Okay, so I begin. Tea or coffee?
Peppermint tea.
Fish and chips or shepherd's pie?
Fish and chips, definitely.
Windows or Mac?
Mac.
GUI or CLI?
Oh, GUI.
Ebooks or hard copy?
Hard copy.
Are you a morning person or night person?
24 hours.
Okay, which city do you like to travel to for business?
That's interesting. London.
As a business traveler, which hotel chain is the best value for money?
Airbnb.
Interesting. What is the most awful thing you have seen in an org?
There are about 640. It's called Org Confessions. What's the most awful thing?
Doing Trailhead in production?
Trailhead in production, I guess. I think the things which are the worst things, which are the things that once you've built them, you can't unpick them. So it would be bad architecture.
All right. What is the most impressive thing you have seen in an org?
Documentation.
Best Dreamforce and why? Year.
2019, because I think they just get better and better.
All right. Last question, yes or no. Can Google be dethroned?
No.
All right. Thank you, Ian. Thank you so much for your time today. Do you have any closing notes?
I'd say, fine. If you see me out and about and you've got a bunch of questions, come and say hello.
Right. What are the channels that people can talk to you? So I know LinkedIn, you're very open. I wrote you on LinkedIn, and thank you again for answering. You're very active on Twitter. And what else?
My email is ian@elements.cloud.
All right. Thank you, Ian. Thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful day ahead.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
That's it for now, folks. Thanks for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, check out the other episodes. Please like, share, and subscribe to Forcepreneur. We are available on all major platforms. If you have feedback about any episode or would like me to interview someone, please go to www.forcepreneur.com and let me know. I will get back to you as soon as I can. This is Ankit Taneja signing out. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.